live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Chatterbox with Alon and Nate, and
hey,
Julie Stouffer will even be back pretty soon after extended hiatus. Nate,
really?
How's it been?
I had no idea.
Had no idea about what?
That Julie would be coming back.
Yes, you
so
did.
So soon. Well, I knew she would be coming back. I had no idea when.
She'll be back. I don't know about next week, because, you know, I didn't talk to her in the last 5 minutes to figure it out, but she will be back, and we will be a happy family again. Now, I am back myself. I just went on a trip to the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, and that's actually why we're recording a little bit later than usual tonight, 10 o'clock. You know, that's later than we usually do it.
Yeah, we usually do it about 4 in the afternoon.
So, unfortunately, for the people who love to get that podcast as soon as it's up there,
they're going to be out of luck for a little bit.
Yeah, I had to stay up extra late Sunday night into Monday.
And you have to get up extra early tomorrow.
And so I do have to get up early.
Extra kind of bad for you.
Ah, no big deal. You know the sleep I've been getting? My sleeping and eating habits when I go to these trade shows go right down the tubes. Yesterday, I actually, it was like 7 o'clock at night, I realized, oh, look at that, I hadn't eaten anything all day. Didn't even realize.
I know how that goes.
All right, so I'll talk about CES in a minute. First of all, I want to point everybody to chatterboxgameshow.com. Go there if you want to know more about the show, what we're doing, hit up our forums, all that stuff. We are podcast only this week, so nobody's listening to this live. It's all recorded. Next week, though, starting January 15th, that's next Sunday, we are going to be back on the air in the KFNX studio, and that's going to last for a few weeks until we're off the air for a couple weeks again, thanks to hockey, and I believe after that, it's all in studio for us. Hockey season is over with. So
really?
Rejoice.
Crazy.
Exactly. You know, some of our listeners aren't too happy with the hockey preemption.
Not too big of a fan with the hockey.
I like it better in the studio. It keeps us on the ball a little more, and we've got Andrew to help us out.
Yeah.
So it's better
with
that
way. With those neat sound effects of his.
Yeah, Andrew's our sound guy. All right, so one of the things that was covered a lot at CES this past week was Burnout Revenge for the Xbox 360.
Apparently it looked really, really good.
Yeah, now since I was away this week, this is going to be my contribution for what I played this week, right? Like to do that at the beginning of the show. I played Burnout Revenge 360. Now, of course, you can expect the gameplay to be virtually identical to Burnout Revenge on the other systems, right? That's to be expected. But you were reading some of the news. Like, what did they say about the 360? What did they say made it different?
Nothing too specific, just that it looked really good. I don't know, I just kind of read news bits. There wasn't anything, a real in-depth article about it.
Yeah,
I mean,
so they were basically going on and on about how good it looked, right?
Yeah.
All right, and that's true. It does look great. Although I got to say, there's still, and I was talking about this before, I think, I don't know if we talked about it on the air, but 360 games are all still more aliased than I expected. They
yes.
talked about all the anti-aliasing that was going to go on in 360 games, and I still see choppiness, but anyway, that's not unique to Burnout or anything. So here's the interesting part of Burnout 360, Burnout Revenge for the 360, which I don't believe is getting the coverage that it should be. So it's going to have some very interesting Xbox Live 360 features. Xbox Live features. And I think the most interesting one is that, you know, let's say you and I are playing, or we play at different times, but there's a time when we do play, so we're on each other's friends list. It'll keep track of, like, you know, we were in a race together, and I beat you miserably, right? And you're a friend of mine, so we can be rivals, you and I. So next time we're playing on live against each other, you could be coming up from behind me, and a notification will come up on the screen and say, arch rival, or I don't know the words they're going to use, but basically, arch rival's behind you, be careful.
So pretty much just like in the regular game, only it's not an NPC car.
It's going to be based on your friends. And
yeah.
So it'll keep track of, you know, how your play has happened in the past. It'll know if you should be gunning for this guy because he's always doing better than you. or if because he has taken you down a lot, and so you want to revenge on him and take him down instead, because you know takedowns are a big part of the Burnout Revenge game.
Yeah, they are.
So it's going to build in basically just some familiarization into the game where. Instead of being so anonymous and NPCs, like you said, you're going to be dealing
with... You're always gunning for your friends.
Your friends. Which I think is going to make it a lot more interesting to play. That's the sort of thing that brings the game home and makes it really feel like you're playing with your friends, even though they're, you know, across the country somewhere. So anyway, I thought that was a great feature, which they did not mention. At least I didn't really see getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
In the press.
Mainly what I saw was just that, oh, it looks so great and it's all pretty.
There was also discussion of how good it sounded, because it was actually being shown in the Dolby booth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
but
they had it set up.
But anything can sound good when you have, you know, 7.1 surround sound.
Yeah, and I mean, I spent a good amount of time there, right? And so there were, you could hear the cars, like as you're whizzing by the cars, right? A million of them, because it's all street traffic that goes really slow. You just hear them whizzing behind you, car after car after car, vroom, 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 vroom. And I don't think that sound effects comes through on our little podcast. But you can just imagine.
Oh, it's I was ecstatic when you were doing your little effects there.
Yeah, Ray Dolby actually came by and was given a demo of the game in his booth. So
cool.
Little unknown fact.
Another pretty game was Final Fight. I downloaded the demo off the marketplace.
I'm gonna correct you. Before we go on, it was Fight Night, not
Fight
Final
Night.
Fight.
Sorry, like I said, bad with the names, never good with those.
Yeah, what happened was, I actually...
You called me up and demanded that I need to download it, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then you said, no fucking way, you need to do it right now.
Yeah.
I can say that, quote for quote, because we're on a podcast.
Exactly. I was in the Microsoft area, right? And I saw Dead or Alive 4, and I was looking, because...
You said it didn't look too good.
Seen the game yet, so I thought, I need to go take a look at this. And I stared at it for a minute, and I thought, how is this different than Dead or Alive 3? And this is coming from someone who's not a big Dead or Alive player, right? And so I'm basing it just off of visuals. And I don't think it looked that different. And I was concerned that there wasn't a lot of fluidity in the clothing. And it looked like the clothing was made out of rulers, and I don't know. Still, that's graphical, not gameplay. The gameplay could be enhanced a lot. I doubt it, but I'll leave that for a DOA expert to analyze. But then my sight shifted, and this is what happened. I look over three or four kiosks, I don't remember exactly, and I see the Fight Night Round 3 demo, which I had heard had just released on Xbox Live Marketplace. And so I quickly picked my jaw up off the floor, and I called Nate. Nate, you got a call from me that said, in a few words, you need to go download that.
And not just, oh, I'm going to do it, and then not do it. I actually had to do it.
Yeah.
So I ran home, and first I went through the lovely process of getting my net access card, and then, long story short, 45 minutes after I've logged on to finally been able to get to the marketplace on the Xbox 360 Live, I downloaded it and played it. Looked really, really good. Not my type of game, but I do have to say graphics were very, very impressive on that.
Yeah, I pointed out during the phone call that I believe the best looking game that I have ever seen.
Hands down, for at least people-wise.
Yeah, it looks
very,
fantastic.
Very real.
And that's what you can do when you essentially only have two characters in the game that ever need to be shown. There are background characters and stuff, and the arenas do look very nice, but there's still not a whole bunch going on.
Yeah, it's usually dimly lit, and you know, it's just you and the guy kind of walking around the ring.
Yeah, and graphically, looked amazing. I mean, you still have to obviously be a boxing game lover if you're
to really enjoy it. I mean, I played it for enough for me to get worn down by how good it looked, and then it was just like, wow, I don't like this game.
Yeah.
But it looked very nice.
I mean, for the record, the previous versions of the game have been enjoyed by many, many people. But as always, you know, you have to like the genre you're playing or you're not going to get much out of it. I actually played a match with somebody, and it was tough because I hadn't used the full control, I think it's called full control, but the dual analog punching control that they have. And after I got used to it, I was doing a lot better. But it felt laggy to me. I don't know. I need to play it some more. I don't like criticizing control schemes of games before I give it a real chance, like in the living room. Playing stuff at trade shows, I've never been able to do well. So
the one thing I guess I can throw this in, just from my playing it, I probably wasn't doing it right or getting it down very well. They, in the demo, they give you about 15 seconds to look at about, you know, all the buttons on the Xbox and try and figure out which they do. I found out what was block and punch. And I'm guessing there's other stuff, because my opponent was uppercutting me and giving me jabs and working the body, and all I could do was just, like, kind of really warm up and, you know, kind of hit him in the head. And I was only able to hit him in the head, but I hit him a lot, so he was bleeding, and that looked really good.
Well, the way the full control works is that the left stick moves your character around, right? And the right stick is basically supposed to be your arm. So if you swing it, like, from down over to the right and then up, that, I believe, don't take this as gospel, but that motion will be simulated on screen, so you'll have, you know, a right jab.
That would have helped me a lot.
To the head, right? And then if you go, like, from right to down or right down to left, you'll be doing, like, a body blow with your right arm. And if you start on the left, obviously use your left hand, and there's ways to do uppercuts. And like I said, I wasn't incredibly proficient because I honestly haven't played a lot of Fight Night in the past. We had it demoed, the original one demoed on Chatterbox almost 2 years ago, but I still never actually got a chance to play a lot of it and get good. So, but that's the point.
I was very ignorant of the control scheme, just for the mere fact that it wouldn't let me stay there and actually read it. So I was mashing a lot of buttons and hoping I did stuff.
I was happy that you went and played it though, because
actually I downloaded the Quake 4 demo too. It's not so great, but I enjoyed the demo. I mean, I probably won't buy the game or anything like that, but it looked nice. It was very Doom 3-ish. So
yeah,
downside I have about the Doom 3 engine is that every game that's made with it looks like Doom 3. But other than that, it was pretty fun, pretty standard.
I don't know if that has to be the case. It just has been.
It has been.
With the two games that have released. Yeah. So now, changing gears completely, basically, before we go to break, I'm going to mention that I had like a miniature fan meetup while I was down there. I don't think I even told you about this, but I met up with a Vegas-based listener of ours, right? He's a big fan of the show, and given that we were in Vegas, there were a lot of DDR machines in the area, and he's a music game fan as well. So I had a couple hours to kill one night without going to a party or whatever, or different press meetups. And so we went and we played some DDR, we played some In the Groove, and I gotta tell ya, I haven't had that much fun in a long time. It was refreshing to be able to play DDR with someone who knew what they were doing and where I didn't have some other agenda, right? And it was good practice for me. I didn't realize this at the time, but the very next day I was in a DDR competition at the Konami booth.
And won first prize, I might add.
I did. It wasn't a very difficult competition. There were only six people, and no one really knew what they were doing, so I felt sort of bad. But yeah, I got myself DDR Extreme 2, so I'll be able to try that and try out some of the iToy features where you use your hands and your feet. That'll be neat. Although they didn't have an iToy set up at the Konami booth, unfortunately, so I couldn't try it there. But now we can try it here in the comfort of my home. So anyway, that's what I did. I think that was Friday night, if I recall. Anyway.
I'm glad I was not there, because I think I would have been bored out of my mind with all the DDR madness.
Oh, you would have loved it. We talked a lot about the show, too. It's good sometimes to meet your fans.
Oh, I have no... I would have loved to have been out there and meet our Vegas fan. But, yeah, DDR, not my one idea of what to do. Mainly my ideas would have involved a bar and lots of glasses.
There were plenty of those. All right, so next segment, we're going to come back after the break and talk a little bit more about what I saw at CES, some of the gaming-specific...
We don't do reviews a whole lot, just to cut in, but I finally got a hold of Indigo Prophecy, and I'd like to talk about that game a little bit.
All right,
before,
so we can do that, too.
Alon breaks into his CES extravaganza.
Not a problem, Nate. We will do that when we come back, and you'll hear about the other things I saw at CES, and we also have a discussion. Nate, you have something prepared to talk about...
That I do.
the mainstreaming of gaming, and of course,
getting games, you know, becoming mainstream and what problems they're facing right now.
Yes, and after that, we've got the news, as always, to finish off the show, and of course, there's been plenty of news thanks to the CES that I just came back from. So we'll be back in just a second, everybody.
Literally just a second.
We're back, everybody. This is Chatterbox with Alon and Nate.
Howdy.
Now, this is actually being recorded for podcast only on January 8th, the day I just got back. Like, what was it, 2 hours ago, Nate?
Yeah, what, just 9 o'clock you got back?
I had to drive myself from Vegas. Takes a little longer than I thought.
Yeah, as I sat outside waiting for you to show up.
Oh, 10 minutes. Wine. All right, so you wanted to talk a bit about a game you played this week, Indigo Prophecy.
So I was talking a while, long while back when the game first came out that I really wanted to play Indigo Prophecy.
And why is it that you hadn't played it until now?
Because I am poor. And funny story about that, I was up in Fargo, and so there's a store called Media Play. Apparently not doing too well, going out of business sale. So not only did I get Indigo Prophecy for about $19, I also, kid you not, got 360 games for about 20% discount.
Yeah, I actually read about that on the internet. They said if you live near a Media Play store, it's going out of business, and they have hardware and software.
Hardware, yeah, hardware was 20% off. I think software was 30% off or something like that. But I got condemned for, I don't know, well, whatever 20% off. I believe I got it for $54 instead of the 60 or 60.
Cool, dude.
Whatever.
Are you excited to have those scratched up too?
Actually, I think I figured out what the problem was. When I went to put it away on the last day I was there, I noticed that when my brother had put it, he had set it in a cabinet underneath it because he has a little daughter.
All right, let's be
her.
A little bit... You're using a lot of pronouns now. Your brother put what away and where?
He put the 360 in a cupboard under the entertainment center because he has my niece. She's almost 2 years old.
Gotcha.
So we didn't want her, you know, throwing it around and banging it up. And I noticed when I took it out on the last day, there's some cords in there, power cords and whatnot, and I noticed the back end was lifted up about, I'd say, a quarter of an inch. So I think maybe it was just the mere fact that it was, you know, askew that my 360 had scratched the Call of Duty CD.
Now, it's too bad that you were away when I left for Vegas, because Azura Disk, a company actually based in Chandler, Arizona, that refurbished discs. They were showing off their machines at CES. Could have fixed that right up for you.
I'm hoping we can contact them sometime in the future now and maybe run over to their place of business for a few minutes.
Maybe we can just go down there. I'm sure they'll be happy to hear from us. All right, so tell me about Indigo Prophecy. That's really what we were supposed to be talking about.
Well, yeah, Indigo Prophecy, mainly a game about doing kind of crazy stuff like killing someone and then calming down by drinking coffee or water. That's pretty much what I've found out with the game so far. It's a fun game. I don't want to come off across that I don't like the game. It's just, I guess I can only relate it to health. Like, the opening scene, you come in and your character... Well, here, there's no health in the game. There's your mental stress level. And if it goes down too low, you get really depressed and you'll, like, quit your job or you will kill yourself. So you want to keep that up. And... So the first scene is you go, you have killed a man, and oh no, you killed him. So what would make you feel better? Well, you drag him into the, let me not get ahead of myself. So you kill this guy in the opening scene, and then your mental stress level goes way down, because obviously you just killed a man.
Wait. His stress level goes down after killing somebody?
Well, yeah, it goes down, so he's like depressed. When it goes up, the highest you can get is neutral. And the lowest you can go is, I'm going to kill myself. So his stress went, you know, down or up a lot, however you want to see it. I'm going to say down just because that's how the point system went. So I felt better because I dragged the murder victim into the stall and closed it. So I felt better. I also felt better when I used the bathroom. I felt better. Even though I'm in a bathroom where with someone that I've just killed, I felt better. Cleaning up the blood, you know, splatter on the floor, that made me feel better.
Hey, blood splatter.
Hey.
Funny story about that. Hanging out in the hotel this weekend, got a bloody nose. One of the worst ones I ever had. I was spraying it like a faucet all over the sink. It was crazy. It looked like the scene of a horrible, horrible crime. All right, keep going. Indigo Prophecy, blood in the bathroom.
So basically, my character has just killed someone. He is near, you know, he's going to kill himself pretty soon. By the time I got out of that bathroom, from merely using the bathroom, washing my face and hands, drying my hands, mopping up the blood, you know, checking, you know, to see if everything's okay, felt pretty good. Went outside, sat down at my table, had a drink of my soda, felt even better. Got up, paid the tab, and left. So I had just killed someone not 5 minutes earlier. And merely doing those things, I felt pretty good about myself.
Now, I got to tell you, sounds like you're mocking the game, and that's not a very good...
I am just finding that it's a little funny. Again, I want to bring across the point that I really do enjoy this game. I just find it slightly funny.
You're not making a very good case for it.
Okay, it is a good game. I think they have to try and find a way to add like a health element in the game, and it by like little tiny tasks. Like later in the game, if you drink some alcohol, you'll get a little bit better. Drink too much, and then you'll get really depressed. So it has some realism in it. One thing that I also found a little funny, Tyrell is one of the people you can play. He is your detective's... There's two detectives in the game, one female and one male, and one is Tyrell. I don't know if Tyrell, he talked to some people, but apparently he has some mystical funk fairies that follow him around and give him some very groovy theme music, as the other two people that you play don't get anything. But I found that very funny.
One guy gets theme music and the
other
don't?
He has very funky 70s theme music wherever he goes.
Nothing like racism in games.
So I thought that was very funny. But other than that, I've played probably about, I'd say, two and a half hours into it. Haven't been able to play it that much. Kind of been busy this weekend. But do really like it. I really want to get the point across that it is a fun game, besides those few points where it gets a little weird.
All right, now... So you talked a lot about it and mocked it a bit. What actually makes it different than other games?
Well, for starters, it's kind of played out as a movie. Like, actually, when you start the game, it says you want to start a new movie. And it really does play out like a movie. I mean, I'm being very redundant here, but that's kind of how it is. Like,
and that's what makes you like it?
It'll make it very tense at some times. Again, I'll fall back to the beginning scene. You have just killed a guy in the bathroom, and then it's a split screen, and then it kind of makes a pan through the diner that you're in, and shows, oh, there's a cop, off-duty cop, he's having some coffee in that diner.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, and scenes like that, and you'll kind of see. It's just kind of very cinematic. It's the kind of game that I could get into. It's a little light on It's kind of, I want to say it's an RPG without the RPG in it. It's more action, I guess, RPG. There's not a lot of reading and stuff, although you can. But,
dude,
I mean, there's not, like, books in there, and you're not having to listen to people talk for hours and hours for stuff to happen.
I think the last 5 minutes is a great example for why we don't review games.
Yes. But I would just like to say it's worth, how about this, I'll say it's not worth buying. But, like, at least rent it. It's a fun game. I liked it.
All right, so maybe we should just limit our reviews, which we don't normally do, to gamer thumbs up or gamer thumbs down.
Oh, we should do that. Mainly, I just wanted to get across kind of... I did want to mock it. That's kind of why I wanted to talk about it.
Great stuff to do for a game you like. Good plan. All right, so Nate likes Indigo Prophecy. And,
even though there's some quirky bits in it.
Interestingly, did not bring it over for me to play. Thanks, Nate.
Sorry.
No problem at all. All right, so let's move on to more stuff that I saw at CES. This is what we're going to do. Not quite news. This will be our second segment of the show, and I'm going to report to you some of the interesting things I saw. Next week, we'll be back to our more ordinary format of industry editorial. So, and you'll be able to call in again, by the way.
Which will
and,
be nice for
talk
you.
Talk to us about that stuff as well. So, here are some of the things I saw there. And to be honest, first of all, I noticed that there really... wasn't a whole lot of gaming stuff there. Now, if you go on to joystick.com or Kotaku.com,
you'll think the CES was all about video games.
You would think there's gaming everywhere. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to look at, like, maybe the 8 bits of stuff that you read about gaming products or gaming headlines or whatever from CES. Now, imagine those all happen at a booth. A booth takes up a small amount of space, relatively speaking. Now, put that booth in the middle of Vegas. And then put the other booth somewhere else in Vegas. Because that's essentially what this place is like. The Las Vegas Convention Center and all of the... Like, it's not just there. It's held at different convention centers.
Really?
You have to take buses from portion of convention center to other portion of convention center. So you could... People have said many times that you could walk around CES, like speed walking, without stopping to talk to anybody or really take a look at anything, and you wouldn't be able to see the whole show. So, to say that I was underwhelmed and didn't see a lot of gaming stuff makes sense if you were actually there. For those of you who just read about stuff on the internet and had access to the internet the whole time, you would wonder, why is it Alon didn't see all these things that we saw reported about? And honestly, one of the reasons I wasn't able to catch a lot of it is because it was so spur of the moment. We weren't really planning on going. And so I wasn't able to prepare and research what companies and such were going to be there. So I apologize. I'm going to do a much better job next year. But I did see some things. All right, first of all, something that we've heard about in the past, but I never actually got to experience, there's a product called the Butt Kicker. Do you know what this is, or
the
do I need to remind you?
The Butt Kicker?
Yeah.
I believe it... I'm assuming it kicks your butt?
In a manner of speaking, it's essentially a giant vibrator for your chair or your couch or your lounger or whatever. Shaped differently than what you would normally call a vibrator, but all the same. It looks... I don't know what it looks like. A giant, like, tube or ball? It's strange. Anyway...
Are you sure you didn't see this at the Adult Entertainment Expo?
No. This is in South Hall.
All right.
I mean, you know how in your video game controllers, you've got a little motor in there.
You got the vibrator, yeah.
All right. So something like that on the proverbial steroids, right? A giant box that does this vibration. And it's based on sound, some sound source, right? So I think it was originally conceived for movies, and they had a couch there you could sit on, and a single butt kicker module was installed in this couch, and they had these movie clips playing, and... The thing that changes is different about this product than other products that produce vibration based on sound. First of all, it does a really good job, right? And they have like a whole separate sound processing box and stuff. But also, the sub doesn't have to be very, very loud to produce a big effect, right? And it doesn't create a lot of noise in addition to whatever the sound you're hearing. You just feel it. So it really becomes... Even though it's a not-so-subtle experience, it's subtle in the way it's interwoven with your experience, right? And so, like, in the movie theater, when there's such huge bass and it rattles your seat and stuff, it's the same effect, but without needing to play the sound so loud that your neighbors can hear you when they're sleeping, right? So, anyway, they took this idea, and they shrunk it down a bit, and they made it adaptable to most... gaming chairs or office chairs. And so now there's the Butt Kicker 4 games. And I got to try it with, I think with Battlefield 2. Didn't really matter what game it was. Any game with guns is going to produce a pretty
Anything
interesting
Anything that
response.
Has lots of sound, I take it?
Well, sound effects.
Oh, okay.
Really. You don't really want it running off of music much. And I don't know if they're able to... I didn't learn enough about it to know if they could differentiate between what's music and what is sound effect. I imagine... you would do better by disabling or lowering the music and increasing your sound effects. But anyway, it was attached to the chair there, and I'm shooting a machine gun, and you can feel it, and it's weird because you could change guns too, just like any other first-person shooter, and so you put in like a grenade instead. And it was very strange how it was able to produce what seemed like, I haven't been near a grenade explosion anytime recently, what seemed like a realistic response. When the machine gun was shooting and you have like a three-shot burst, it was a real quick like tapping, tap, 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 shake of the chair, or a grenade was more like a subtle and elongated vibration, and you can make fun of this product, right? It sort of sets itself up for that. I can see
as I did in the beginning.
I can see the grin on your face.
Yeah,
I know, but it really does work well with the experience, and it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to be shaken, right? But I love that sort of thing, and you know, I haven't had an extended experience with it. I don't know how I would feel after using it for an hour. But I sat watching a movie clip for like 5 minutes, and I was loving every second of it. So I thought it was great. And the gaming version, I think, is not incredibly expensive, maybe $150. I got to tell you, working on getting some as prizes.
Ooh.
For our listeners. So one day
we might
have
a
butt kicker for you. Really does kick your butt. It was a very interesting product, which I'd read about but hadn't had a chance to use, and now, of course, I have, and I'm going to learn more about it, hopefully.
Now, did you see any of this? I was reading a lot about it was like exercise and gaming.
There was a lot of that. In the Sands Expo specifically, that's where the Konami booth was, where I had the little competition thing.
Oh, okay.
There were a lot of I didn't bother spending a lot of time with any of them because it was all... It's not the stuff you're going to be playing on your PS2 or your GameCube or whatever.
Yeah, just like it's from what gyms. I read and like saw just from the kind of pictures I saw, I was like, wow, I would never use that.
Well, people do, but it's not geared towards home use. It's geared towards like 24-hour fitness gym centers.
Oh, okay. Well, right? All right.
You don't look like you've been in a gym recently.
I do not. Look like I've been in the hospital for a long time with malnutrition.
I was at a gym in Phoenix not incredibly long ago. Technology-wise, it was a long time ago. It was like 2 years, right? And they had really arcane-style sort of gaming exercise machines where like you're riding a stationary bike, actually a recumbent bicycle, and it had handlebars and some buttons, and so as you rode, it... basically allowed you to move your tank or your bicycle or whichever game you were playing, move it forward, and then you could control everything else. But you had to be riding it, otherwise it wouldn't go anywhere. And when you're racing somebody down a hill or when you're trying to attack somebody, you have to move the tank, right? So it made sense. But it really we're talking like Super Nintendo quality graphics.
Ooh, very nice.
All right, you remember Race Driving in the arcade, like the first 3D racing
game
in the arcade?
Yeah.
It was that quality.
Wow.
These days, they've gotten a lot better.
Not going to cut it, but probably
a
little better now.
A bunch of stationary bikes. That's a pretty common exercise video game machine because I think it's easy to translate into gaming motion. But they had other stuff. Like I saw something I didn't see at the actual show, but I saw, I think on Joystick or something, news where they had another dance pad style game, and it probably was connected to a PC, but it looked similar to a DDR dance pad, but it was set up differently, so apparently someone had programmed in a new game, and I wish I saw it, but like I said, all sorts of stuff I missed.
From what I read, it was kind of like a combination between the Nintendo, I forget the name of it, but the running pad.
Dance aerobics? Oh no, track and field.
The track and field pad, and then like the glove.
Yeah, the power pad, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. It had hand? It had a glove?
It didn't have a glove, but that's what they compared it to.
That's weird.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how
I have a glove
worked.
At home, by the way.
You do have the glove at home.
In storage. Somewhere far away. It's at my parents'
Alan
house.
Alan always likes to point out which, arcane...
Which crap I have and have never used.
Yes.
Yeah, that's me. All right, so I'm going to talk about one other thing I saw.
All right, go for it.
That I actually did see at the CES. I had set up an appointment ahead of time with a company called Vocel. This is a company you're never going to hear about. Doesn't matter from a consumer point of view. But they create mobile software, not gaming stuff. But they produced, and the thing, I don't even know if it has a name, but they produced something that you can download for your Verizon phone and for other phones in the future. I think they said T-Mobile was going to happen like next week or something, or maybe in 2 weeks.
All right.
But right now is on Verizon and possibly one other service. I think eventually it's going to be fairly universal. So anyway, you download this program, or you can connect to it over wireless protocol, right? So you don't have to actually download it to your phone. You can just use the web interface if you have web on your phone. And you pay like a small subscription fee, like $2, I think $1.99 or something. I'm not a big fan of subscribing to anything personally. Other people,
they love
mind.
To do that stuff.
Yeah. So they have all these programs that they make that are not the kind of thing that gamers care about. But then they teamed up with Prima, they make all the strategy guys and stuff. Well, I mean, they make some of them. Brady makes others, and Nintendo makes others. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you.
Prima is one of the top strategy guide makers, and they have a very thorough list of gaming codes and cheats for games, like, covering every platform imaginable. And so you download this program to your cell phone, or you access it over WAP. I suggest downloading it if you're going to use it. It's better that way. And you can just put it, you can search, you know. You can search for the word dead. Might not be a good one to use, because it's kind of a common word in gaming. But let's say you type in dead, it'll come up with Dead or Alive, Red Dead Revolver, whatever. Very simple. And you find it and the game, and it shows you all the codes for that game and whatever. This is stuff you can do on the internet right now. You can go to GameFAQs. You can find that on your own. But apparently, what is surprising is that it's actually the number one selling program they've made.
Really?
Company did, and it's been extremely successful. I thought at first there's no chance of gaming information being given over the phone to be successful, but I was also thinking ahead of time strategy guide, because I knew that it was Prima.
Yeah.
I thought they were just giving strategy guides. You know, like you say, I want this strategy guide, and they send it to you in full text, and that would be, I think the kids would say, hella lame, right?
Yeah, yeah, the young kids with, you know, with the baggy pants and the cell phones.
Yeah. But that's not what it is. It's cheat codes. And if you're the type of person who wants cheat codes and whatever, and you're at your friend's house and they don't have internet, or you don't know how to use the internet or something.
I think if you know how to use your cell phone.
Yeah, you could grab it on your cell phone. For some people, it could be very valuable. And I got to say, like, it was simple enough to use. Great. I've said I personally don't use a lot of cheat codes. I don't like subscription fees. But it has done very well. So our listeners or other people who play games apparently do enjoy the service. So if you didn't know about it already, now you do. Go find it on your cell phone. The menus on cell phones and finding extra stuff, by the way, pain in the butt. I don't know if you've ever searched for stuff.
Yeah.
Like Verizon, you have to like get fun in games.
And then it's very difficult.
Yeah.
You actually sent me a picture text message. And I still haven't seen it because I haven't wanted to deal with the bullshit that T-Mobile makes me go through to look at a picture, but I don't think I'll ever see it for the rest of my life.
All right. Yeah, that's cell phone interface for you. I don't know why you didn't get the actual picture.
I don't know either. But we'll they told
T-Mobile.
Me to go to this site, and it's like, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah, pay you web fees so I can go on the web with my phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Vocel makes this program. Like I said, you're never going to see the word Vocel, but they did a good job. It's a simple little applet. And, you know, if you like cheat codes and you like spending $2 a month, go for it.
This kind of seems it's similar to, I forget the company that does it, but there was a company out there that will notify you when game systems will be coming into a certain store or all stores. And you paid a nominal fee for a year subscription to this. And I couldn't understand, why would I want to pay a year?
This is the thing that came out recently for the 360 launch?
For the 360, yes. Like, if you give us, you know, like, I believe it was $40-some dollars. Like, they'll let you know anytime a store gets it. Like, well, if I get one, I'm never going to want to know when it comes into stores ever again.
Well, I think this was clearly something for the profiteers, so you would buy as many as possible.
True. Right? But still, I just, like, I really didn't see that going anywhere.
I heard a story that one UAT student managed to pre-order and collect 7 Xbox 360s.
Really?
And then put a down payment on his car with the profit he made from selling Xbox 360s.
Why did we not do that?
So apparently the future of console profiteering is not to buy a system, sell it, and then buy a second one and keep
it.
It is to buy as many as possible because you live in a city that has 20 different stores that take pre-orders. I think, and I was thinking about this today on the drive back from Vegas, I think the companies should, like cars, right? When you buy a car, if you want a Toyota Prius, or if you wanted a Toyota Prius a year ago,
yep,
you paid extra money because there weren't enough. Simple supply and demand, it's been discussed before.
Yes.
In the case of the Xbox 360, I don't understand why, but it's taboo for major retailers like Best Buy or Target or CompUSA or anybody. You know we love Target.
Oh,
it's
great company.
Yeah, taboo for them to sell for greater than the manufacturer's suggested retail price.
Yep.
The MSRP, $399.99 for premium,
not
that's what they sold for.
Not frowned upon if you make it into a bundle that costs up to $700 and force customers to buy that. Now, that seems perfectly fine.
Well, now, like GameStop and whatever, they prepared these bundles, but they didn't require
it.
But and besides, you're getting more for your money.
Yeah, but some stores were saying, well, the people that bought the most get theirs first.
Yeah. I think that was GameStop.
That was GameStop. Not all GameStops. Some were first come, first serve. Yeah. The good stores.
I think that was them. Managerial decision. But let's take a look at the car industry, right? You can buy a Toyota Prius, last year at least. I think now they're probably more available, but I don't know for sure. I haven't tried to buy one. Price was higher. In particular, the Ford GT lately.
Yep.
I think was like $100,000+. It was over $250,000 to buy one of those because they were... supply.
Yeah.
And all broken, by the way.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So, supply and demand seems to work for the car industry. Big industry, backbone of the U.S. industrial economy, at least it was once. Target, though, can't sell a system for a penny more. They'll get yelled at. So, I think what they should do, knowing that this is going to happen with all console releases for the rest of time, unless a company is able to actually produce enough, they should say, you know what? For the first month, the systems are going to cost 25% more. It's going to be $500 for a premium system, and that's it. Or they should make it $600, whatever. Or they should say, go to town, sell it for whatever you want. Let the companies make more. I don't care. It's better than people like me selling it on eBay and making money off of it.
Yeah.
Why can't the companies who are actual distributors of it make the money?
True.
And then maybe they could give you a game cheaper.
Maybe.
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 Right? Instead of having to go through mail-in rebates through Microsoft.
Next segment, I want to talk about maybe making games a little cheaper.
Yeah, so I think maybe they should go to that system because, you know, Joe Schmo is profiteering off of it, and, you know, they can get around that.
It's a dynamic economy that you don't want to snuff that out. You don't want big businesses taking that away from the little guy.
Apparently not. You know, something else I read today... that I wanted to talk about next week, actually, for an editorial, was the guy who told... He went on, like, official hiatus from work, and he said, my job for a whole year is going to be virtual economy, like making money off of RPGs, MMOs, or whatever, and selling it on eBay.
Okay.
And that was going to be his sole income. And so he actually reported to the IRS this is how he was making money, and so he wrote a big article about the complications determining... you know, how you're actually supposed to report this.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you know, it's a new year now, and his experiment has come to an end. I don't know if he's going to continue doing this, but at least 1 year's up. And so he read, like, the official rules
on... How do you report Gilder on your IRS? Yeah.
So this is interesting to me, and I think we might talk about it next week. Stay tuned for that if you're interested at all. And, of course, that might be a hot topic for some of the listeners out there who've done that, and we'll want to hear from you, too. We'll have a phone number next week, 866-536-1100. Just don't call it right now.
Because you won't hear anything.
So, yeah, that we went off on a tangent
Another tangent, yes.
But that was my CES experience, both sell and butt kicker. And like I talked about before, I saw DOA 4, which didn't impress me all that
Apparently
much.
Apparently they were wearing rulers.
It. Yeah, maybe when I play it, I would like it more. Anyway, Fight Night Round 3 we saw. One interesting thing I saw that I have to mention, just because... I have to. Not incredibly related to games, but there was a lot of it. Microsoft had a big keynote, and like in one keynote, they were able to basically kill a million different electronic devices by saying, "Oh, Windows is going to do everything. You don't need a TiVo anymore."
Is this the Vista they were talking about?
Yeah, you don't need a cable box anymore. You don't need a TiVo. You don't need anything. Basically, Windows is going to do everything.
You need a house and Windows Vista. That's
it. But when you actually look at Media Center, you know, it does all the stuff that, you know, you can do on the 360 with Media Center Extender or whatever. It didn't do home interactivity stuff. I went to an HP demo at CES. They had a big sexy plasma screen and whatever, but they also had this Media Center box, which was a special like HP version of it. It looked exactly the same when you saw it on the screen, but it had options for not only, you know, streaming your TiVo content and looking at the channel's guide and everything that you can already do with Windows Media Center, which, by the way, is really cool. But it also had control over, like, it had My Home. You could change the temperature.
Really?
Of, you know, your house or parts of your house. You could have all your sound. You know how you can play MP3s or whatever.
But this is, I mean, yeah, that stuff's cool, but that's only for people who have a lot of money and who are able to do that kind of stuff.
But in the future, I think it might be standard.
I mean, they've had remote control homes before. I mean, this is anything new.
We're in my house right now, right? And I bought it at a certain point in time. It had Ethernet jacks built in the wall. One day, houses, I think, will be built to accommodate these sort of features. Won't be next year.
Yeah, just not next year.
But I bet in 10 years it's going to be fairly standard for new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm
let me
saying
continue.
Right now.
Right. So you can play music on your TV and whatever, and in your stereo system through this Windows machine, or an extender you have at your television. But my home allows you to actually play it on speakers in any room in the house. You can have it connected and say, you name them, like the living room, the kitchen, the den, whatever, and you can change the volume of specific areas, all from one central hub. Or, of course, I mean, you could...
Which really works well if you want to lower the sound and you're in the kitchen, so you just have to run into the living room.
Well, no, like, if you had a computer in the kitchen, like one that's built into a refrigerator, which they exist.
Yes, they do. They'll tell you when you're low on milk.
I imagine from any computer you can access the Windows Media Center stuff because it's on the network. So you can change not just the music, though. Like I said, you can change the temperature. You could change the lighting. I mean, we've all known that Bill Gates' house is totally connected. You could do everything.
Oh, yeah.
On the computer, right. But you can change the lighting. You can raise the shades if you have electronic shades. And, you know, you won't be seeing that stuff in
the
house
80s,
I own.
So you got to have that.
But it's all the stuff that you see in, like, Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
But they've actually started making it.
So does fruit come out of the ceiling too?
No fruit out of the ceiling. But I was excited to see that. I did see a lot of mounts for plasma TVs and stuff, so you could raise TVs and lower them. Just not fruit.
Okay.
Anyway, this segment's run a little bit long.
A little bit. I had a feeling that this was a little long.
Yeah. I think we're going to cap it. That was CES for me. There was a lot more that I didn't see because really it was impossible. And there is some other stuff I'm going to cover for a couple other things that I saw at CES. We'll do that during the news at the end of the show today. Right now, we will be back after some music and some breakage.
All right. See you then, folks.
I love the music we play here on Chatterbox.
Very good.
We're back, everybody. Chatterbox Video Game Radio with Alon and Nate here in my home studio.
Yes, very nice home studio.
Another podcast-only show, thanks to hockey. We will be back next week.
In studio, so you can give us a call and all that fun stuff.
For those who missed the real radio station and the ability to call us, you'll be able to do it next week again.
And Andrew. Those fans of Andrew. I mean, they're out there somewhere.
Yeah. Girls were taking tops off for Andrew, I heard.
That was the talk.
I'm kidding. Girls don't do that. No girls I know. Anyway,
I think maybe you're not giving Andrew enough credit.
Andrew's a good guy. All right. Now, you wanted to talk about an escapist article.
Yeah, so...
Am I right?
Yes. The escapist article that brought up some good points about how gaming is going mainstream.
Something we've talked about in the past.
Yep, and how this guy feels that maybe they're not doing the best idea because they're still doing what they've been doing for the past 20 years.
Who's they?
The gaming industry.
Okay.
Gaming companies. Pretty much he related it to DVD sales, or just like the DVD and video industry, you know, it's the movie industry. Like how, like, for it to be mainstream, like right now, at any given time, you know, I want a DVD player, so I'm going to go down to Stuckey's, you know, our local fine gas station / you know, Popeyes or whatever. And in there, I'm going to be able to buy for a reasonable price a DVD player. It's not going to do a lot. It's not going to be great, but I'm going to be able to buy one. And for that, along there, I can buy a DVD for, say, $10 or $20. And that's what's making it mainstream, that anyone can get this for a very reasonable price, you know, and they'll have a very large selection. Games do not have that. He other made a good point about how systems just aren't around long enough to become mainstream. Like, every, you know, gaming systems need to last longer than, you know, 5 years. And games, you know, need to be around longer than, you know, 6 months to a year.
All right, hang on. I want to focus on that first point.
Okay.
You said, since someone can buy a DVD player and a DVD easily and cheaply, that somehow makes it more successful than gaming?
It's more accessible to the masses. Whereas, well, let's take the 360. You know,
is he suggesting that games cost $20 instead of $50?
He is, but he has a good point of how this can be done. I guess I could go into that. He had the idea, he liked the idea of the 3DO. Didn't go very well.
Wait, what did he like about the 3DO?
Basically, how it was marketed towards that So let's say you get a 3DO, but they sell the rights to that hardware to, say, Sony and, you know,
oh,
all
yeah.
these, like, TV. So he was hoping
that... different companies made
3DOs. Yeah, he was hoping at some point they'll, like, you're going to walk into Walmart or a Target even, and I want to buy a TV. And one of the bullet points of buying this TV is that it has a built-in game system. So...
it's been done before.
Has it?
There was an NES built into a television.
Okay, well, his system was a little different where, let's say, you know, in 5 to 10 years, his example was the, I believe, the Nintendo Revolution, where the manufacturing cost for the hardware of a Nintendo Revolution is like $20. So you sell that out to all these other companies that don't make games, but they, like, make electronic, you know, something. So next thing you know, you have a Revolution in your TV. You have it in your, you know, TV tuner. You have it in your DVD player. So now you're suddenly able to buy, you know, Revolution games and older games up to the NES for very cheaply, and it's very accessible because it's already there. So even if it's not a selling point, you know, Dad brings home the TV, and he's, you know, he's bored one day, and he's like, oh, what's this? Oh, I can get... I remember that game. You know, I used to play it when I was little. Now I can download it and play it again. And mainly he was trying to... so it's getting away from piracy, and you're able to find these old games. Like, to make an example with movies, let's say I want to watch Tron. I can go down to, you know, Fry's Electronics or Best Buy, and I can buy Tron. Very old movie. Now, let's say I want to go down and buy Sam and Max Hit the Road. Nowhere to be found. The only way I could do that is maybe to track it down on eBay or something like that.
Man, this... but his analogy is seriously flawed, because what he's saying is that, yeah, you can go to Stuckey's or whatever you said, get a DVD player, and buy movies, but it's like you can only buy movies from 20 years ago. And stuff that's black and white, and the stuff that, you know...
well, his
nobody
main point
wants.
Is, like, it just... it's too... it costs too much for games now to be mainstream. 360 won't be mainstream because it costs, you know, $500, and all the games cost $60. It's just too much money for a casual person to buy. Like, The Sims got close, but, you know, they were nowhere near mainstream. It's just that systems and that cost too long, and they don't last long enough to be able to become mainstream.
Well, I tell you what, that vision he has, never going to happen, because it's a technology-driven hobby. And it's that also means that it's driven by new stuff. So, yeah, people want nostalgia. They want their older games. But that's not going to be the bulk
yeah,
of anything.
Well, that was kind of my kind of one of the flaws that I thought he had. His idea was that a good game's a good game. You know, Final Fantasy VII is just as good today as it was when it came out, you know, that long time ago. And there's, you know, many more old games. Like, I believe a while back I talked about Metal Warrior, a game for the Super Nintendo, and I recently found it, never knew about it. I thought it was the greatest game that I had played up in, not, well, not the greatest game, but a very good game. And it was on the Super NES, and I really enjoyed it, and I played it a lot. You know, and I, you know, I guess technically didn't pay anything. But let's say, you know, I have my TV with my, you know, game system already built in, and I say, oh, here's Metal Warrior. I remember that game, so I buy it for a dollar or two.
Yeah,
and now
so that's
I
happening
have a
all
really
over
fun game.
That's happening all over the place now. There's GameTap service where you can play a bunch of games. I mean, it's on your computer, but you can access all these old games. And, of course, the Revolution is going to open that way up where you can get access to, you know, pretty much any Nintendo game.
Well, that's a good point, but again, it's not accessible. Not, you know, grandma doesn't have a computer. I know most people have computers now, but still,
grandma,
like,
has a TV.
People aren't gonna, you know, yeah, that's the thing. Everyone owns a TV, so if it's built in, you know, eventually everyone's going to have something like this.
Yeah, you know what? Most companies, are they convergence project products are being made a lot now, but most companies realize that still your one product needs to do its one task and do it well, rather than making your one product do 20 different things. And, like, there was a Nintendo built into a TV a long time ago, and There was a TV with giant speakers built into it, that GX TV. I don't know if you remember that. And all sorts of stuff like that. But this, the product like that you're going to include in the television or in every DVD player or whatever really does have to have very little manufacturing cost. And that means you're only looking at like 5 or 10 years behind the current stuff. And like I said, video games are all based on new stuff. So the only way that that would be successful is if the new stuff were very cheap and going into all the DVD players.
Well, you know, that's another thing I kind of pointed out, that, you know, it is, just like you said, it is very tech-driven. His idea was that, you know, since, you know, it is very, you know, it's everywhere, and they have this maybe untapped market for cheap games, so maybe development companies start making games for, like, the Nintendo again, but they make good games. His example was, like, you know, The Secret of Mana, and, you know, Final Fantasy, and all these, like, Metal Warrior, for my example. These are all old games, and they're really good. They don't have to have the, you know, greatest graphics. A good game's a good game.
Well, let me tell you what. That is being done. Right now. That's what casual games are. That's what Xbox Live Arcade is. That's what Yahoo Games is, and every other website that allows you to play casual games. You've heard of Bejeweled, and Hexic is built right onto your Xbox 360 if you have the hard drive one. Zuma apparently has been very successful in Xbox Live Arcade, and like I said, GameTap allows you to play all those old games. Like, that's being done on your cell phone.
These are like casual games. These aren't games, you know.
What?
Like,
what
in-depth
you're describing.
These are like little, oh, I need to kill 5 minutes. You know, these are casual games, not, you know, you're not going to find, you know, the next, I hate to keep using this example, but Final Fantasy VII on, you know, next to Bejeweled.
Yeah. I disagree. I think that, I mean, the computer is the common, is the key there, because, I mean, a lot of people do have a computer. And listen, if you don't have a computer, you're also not a person who's going to buy any of these old games. Regardless, there's a market share that exists, and some people you're not going to get, no matter what delivery system you have, for many reasons. And the computer, I think, is a fairly common one, and that stuff exists. It might not be
You know, I like the PC as much as anyone. Oh, probably more than some people, because it's kind of my thing. I wish I had a new one right now so I could stay current. I can't, so I'm unfortunately forced to do the console thing. But the PC, it just, you know, it kind of scares away some people. You know, it's becoming less and less that now, but there's still those people that, oh, I don't know how to use a computer. You know, I don't want to do it. Like, I would say anyone in my age range or younger, parents who are, let's say, in their 40s or 50s right now, you know, I'm going to just throw that out there, 40s and 50s. I'm not sure if this is correct. I'm sure someone can prove me wrong. But those people can't really handle the computer too well. Like, maybe they know enough, they can check their email, and on AOL that holds their hand the whole time, they're going to be able to do that. But he was suggesting more of, you know, a universal thing, like the TV or a receiver or something that everyone already has and is familiar and safe with. A PC is still just too, I think, scary for some people for that to become a universal, you know, unit for that
kind
of stuff.
Well, let me ask this. Did he make any other points aside from just the accessibility?
Basically, he talked about how developers would, you know, hopefully start, you know, making better games to get development costs down. So let's say a company's like, oh, well, there's all these people that will play old Nintendo games now. So let's make a good game based off, you know, like Nintendo architecture. So their production cost goes way down, cost of the game goes way down, so now more people will buy it.
Yeah, so that's casual games for you.
Well,
that's what you're describing.
Again, I just want to get away from, you know, not casual. When you say casual games, what are you talking about? I'm assuming you're talking about Bejeweled and, you know, Puzzle Pirates and stuff like that. Really short mini games and stuff like that.
It doesn't have to be. There are games that can be story driven that way, but aren't built for the latest technology. Something that can be played on your cell phone. The cell phone is fairly ubiquitous. A lot of people have it, and there's lots of games on it now. And the cell phone's a bad example for extended gameplay, because it's usually a 5-minute time killer, like you said. But
Well, I mean, when you say casual games, that's all I think about, you know, because you talk about Yahoo games and stuff like that. They don't have any, you know, deep-driven, you know, maybe like story-driven games or anything.
There are plenty of PDA-based games, or like the N-Gage tried to be a full gaming system too. Like, there are plenty of non-console things where games are cheaper but still have extended storylines.
Well, yeah, you can, but you're not bringing the two things across. Yeah, it's casual and, you know, they can play, but then the accessibility is not there. I mean, you get one point that, yeah, you can say that, but then, you know, again, that accessibility is just not there, that everyone has this thing. Because not everyone has cell phones, too, and not everyone has PDAs.
Well, what does everyone have?
Well,
a TV?
His example would be the television.
All right, yeah. There's a number of reasons why that is a horrible example, and it, letting a bunch of different companies make something like, you know, like make the Nintendo GameCube or the Revolution, right? It wouldn't work for a number of reasons. One of which is security, right? Companies are all super secure with their gaming systems now,
true.
Just mod chips and all that. That's only one reason, but also there's quality control as well. And I think the companies that really make games are going to be able to make what you're calling good games, those are the people who are going to be making games on current systems, because that's where the biggest market for video games is. The people who want the new stuff, because they're the real gamers. And so the people who...
Well, it's not that it's the biggest market. It's just like right now it's the only market for stuff like that.
That's the market who pays for the games. If they're...
Well, I mean, what's wrong with trying to tap into another market?
And what I'm saying is that's the casual game market. And yeah, the games tend to be shorter, but those, by the way, are the games that appeal to the people who aren't hardcore gamers.
You do have a point there.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to argue with you, like you were the guy who wrote the article or anything. I know you see that there's imperfections.
Yeah, I'm just saying he has some very, you know, good ideas. Like, I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing this happen, because it does seem, you know, maybe not exactly what he says, but to me it would just help. Like, his one point, which I really like, is by doing this, we hang on to our old games. Like, you can still buy, you know, you can go into a bookstore and get Charles Dickens, but I can't go in and get Space Quest, you know, or any older game. And, you know, even if I do manage to find it, who's to say I'm going to be able to play it, you know, on my, you know, whatever system that I have, because they go out of date so often.
I'll tell you what, that actually, I can understand that. I don't think any of his suggestions solve that problem for any reason. I haven't seen a solution there at all. But that's also a problem that people are aware of now, and is, I mean, you'll never know that it's gone away completely, but it's being changed. Now, the Revolution's a good example where we can play all those old games. A lot of stuff's being released for new systems. I don't think that's a great solution,
even then, that's not going to last forever, because even ports, those systems that they're being ported to are going to go obsolete.
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, I remember I was at a game developers conference, as I am every year, right? And I think it could have been 3 years ago. And someone brought up the idea of a gaming museum, and I thought to myself, what a damn fine idea, right? And there actually, I believe, is a gaming museum, or was at some point, and maybe it
I heard about that. I think it was out east somewhere. But
I think it died.
Yeah.
It didn't have enough funding. But anyway, I think he wasn't describing just a gaming museum, but like an agency where all the games are you send a copy to this agency and they hold on to it. Like all the movie studios have
their archives under mountains and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Well, I don't know about under mountains. I don't know anything about it.
Well, I know of one out in California that's under a mountain. That's why
okay.
I brought it up.
So there's central archiving of movies and literature, probably the same way with libraries and stuff. And with games, they don't have that. So like, when a company gets bought out or dies or whatever, all this code disappears, and it's lost forever. But, you know, in a burgeoning industry, that'll happen. There are movies that we don't have because they came out in the first few years of movie production.
But it's not the first few years anymore, and we're still losing games that,
It is.
I mean, games have been around since, if we want to talk about arcades, since 82. You know, I can't find, I'd be very hard-pressed to find a game that was made in, 98 still.
Yeah, so this is only 20 years. There are other factors, right? The economy and the way that money-making happens these days is very different than it used to be. You know, there's not three companies that do everything. There's a million of them. They're always changing hands. It's always different people. There's less loyalty now. There's more turnover. There's a million reasons why this is more difficult.
Yeah.
But it's also a problem that's being recognized. And, games are already being sent. Like, every game now is rated and sent to the ESRB. It would be, I think, a relatively small step to also archive them. But no matter what, because it's technology, right? There are movies that probably haven't been converted to DVD.
Oh yeah,
so
I know there are. But then
nobody buys a VHS.
There are some that are very bad that have been converted. You know, it's kind of becoming, like they're all starting to. I mean, I know some are going to slip through the cracks, but for the most part, a lot of them are being updated. He's bringing up the fact. I agree with him that he's just kind of pointing out the problem that I can still buy, War and Peace, whereas, if I want to, go get Sam and Max Hit the Road, I'm not going to be able to find it. Like, I can't possibly, unless I pirate it, there's no way I'm going to be able to find it legitly. Whereas if someone wants to get, 1984, they can. They can just go into a bookstore and buy it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear why that is, because putting something on paper, or perhaps in a slightly different format of paper, a different size, a different shape, would still work and would still be able to read it. And games require, or they are dependent on technology, so obviously it's less easy to transfer. And that's a problem that exists and I don't think it could ever go away, but with emulation, that problem is solved, and it's just a question of maintaining the code. And emulation is essentially the solution to the problem.
Oh, yeah, it's there, but, the thing is, you have to be breaking the law if you want to play some of
No. GameTap, I brought that up before.
Yeah, GameTap, yeah, but they, from as far as I know, they only play certain Atari games.
They play plenty of games. It's not a question of ability. It's a question of licensing and all that, and that's why it's going to be difficult. But, yeah, emulation really is the solution to the problem.
Well, I think companies would be more readily available to, release these games if they know people would buy them.
It's happening. The digital distribution is still extremely young. Like, the only successful version is Steam.
Steam, and even that's, it's come under criticism, too.
Yeah.
It's starting to pick up, though.
But imagine, with digital delivery so much more possible now because a larger portion of the population has high-speed internet and access to all sorts of things and knowledge of the fact that other things exist than just email and word processing, right? The industry is changing and will move towards, I'm sure, digital distribution of old intellectual properties. So Sam and Max Hit the Road would not be surprised at all if LucasArts, right?
Yeah.
Provides access to that without using an actual disc. I'm sure it will happen. Maybe not for, old games. Maybe only for games starting from a certain point moving into the future. But
I don't know about old games. I mean, look at, Frogger and stuff like that. You can still find those if you look hard enough.
Yeah, well, you can very legitimately get those.
I think it's more going to be like the middle ground games that, they were there, but they weren't hugely popular, and they just kind of float away. They go bye-bye.
I think emulation and digital distribution is the solution to the problem that he's whining about, because we're always going to have computers, barring some natural or human-made giant disaster. We're going to have computers, and we're going to be able to emulate all that old stuff, and it'll take a universal transfer. So you have to write a new emulation wrapper for this new processor or whatever, but then all these old games will work on it. Or you're going to create, the emulator for this type of PC, which could run, let's say, Sam and Max Hit the Road. Yay. And so that is the solution. I answer that question right now. That's the solution. We can put it to rest. I'm better than that guy. Who is this guy? Who wrote this article?
Oh, James O.S. something. I forget his last name. You'll have to look it up. I'm very bad right now with, like I said, with names, but it's James something.
Go to The Escapist, read about it. Nate, I'm sure he made some fine arguments, but if he did not mention digital distribution
he
and
does
emulation,
mention digital distribution.
Well then, clearly he understands as well. We're going to go to break again, everybody. We're going to be back with the news segment, the end of the show, in just a minute. Alright, we are back for the final segment. It's the news, everybody. Chatterbox Video Game Radio with Alon and Nate.
Hey, folks. And who doesn't love the news?
It's everybody. Everybody loves the news. Not everybody doesn't love the news. We all do. Okay, so here's what I got for you. A bunch of news.
I think we need a better intro sound for that.
We don't have that whooshing sound or the sound effect of Morse code from the radio tower. This is the news, everybody. So here's what it is. I just read that apparently there's a mod chip for the Xbox 360 that is supposedly going to come out in the next couple weeks and allow you to play ISOs. And
is that the Hext one or something like that I read about? But it was like a spoof or something?
Well, there apparently is this continual back and forth over whether or not it's real. And the company, supposedly the company that's making it, Infinity Mods, I mean, they have made Xbox mods in the past. So it'd sort of be killing their reputation and future potential to make money off of mod chips if they lied now. So it's, I mean, obviously, until somebody has it in their hands, until you have it in your hands and in your system, I wouldn't believe it, right? I wouldn't believe it until I saw it for myself. But, you know, there is reason to believe that perhaps this is coming. Now, the strange thing is, Thursday night, I was out at some, you know, CES press party, whatever, with a couple people, one of which works for Microsoft. And he was saying to me that the Microsoft Xbox developer people, or people that were involved in it who knew about the security of the system and stuff, had a discussion with this guy in the past, and they said, yeah, when we released the Xbox, I mean, it was so, we were always working, and it was very quick to come to market, meaning like they didn't have a time to finish up everything. It was their first entrance into video game systems, whatever. They were basically just betting on when it was going to be cracked, right? When it was going to happen. They knew it would be. It wasn't a big surprise to them. And that person also said, with the Xbox 360, there's no bet. Nobody knows. Like, he can't even think of a way for them to break through because it's got such strong security in
really?
It.
Really? But we've, I mean, read, you know, when you say stuff like that, it's, you know, less than 6 months later that someone does it just because someone says, well, you can't do this.
Yeah, that it's sort of a rule. Is that Murphy's Law? Does that apply here? Whatever can happen will?
I'm not sure Murphy's Law, but I'm sure there's one out there.
Yeah. So anyway, he seemed to think that it would be very, very difficult, and this is certainly the fastest I have ever heard of some sort of hacksaw solution coming out for a system, and like even faster than the Dreamcast. This is not even 2 months after, and they claim that they have a chip.
Well, you know, sometimes when they're so secure, you know, they get so tight with the security that, you know, they leave a crack.
Yeah.
You know?
I got to tell you, by the way, mod chip manufacturers, notoriously bad when they give any sort of release date or release window. Oh, we'll have it next month, and it takes 6 months for that thing to happen. And then by that time, it's already outdated. And anyway, I did think it was interesting, though. There's not a lot of news about it. On a website, xboxscene.com, I would have expected there to be news, and they didn't even mention it, but Kotaku had a bunch of news about it, and Infinity Mods has their own website up claiming that the chip will be out soon. It doesn't say in 2 weeks, but Kotaku said it at some point they had written 2 weeks. But obviously they took that down, or I just can't find it. So anyway, the ICE chip, supposedly first Xbox 360 chip, gonna let you play all sorts of stuff that you might want to play.
Now, is that going to be on a memory card, or is that where you're going to have to solder stuff?
No, that's some heavy solder action. Like 20 to 30 wires have to be soldered.
Ooh, sounds fun.
That's like the PS2. You gotta solder like mad. But it doesn't. I mean, you could just pay somebody else to do that, or buy a system with it already installed. Like if you're in Malaysia and you buy a video game system, it's already been. You don't even have to ask.
Or if you live in, I believe it was New Jersey, and you happen to go to that one store, those guys.
Yeah.
Of course, they got arrested now, but I'm sure you know they'll be back on their feet in no time.
Yeah. So in other Microsoft news, I was all same guy I was having a discussion with, right? And of course, a lot of people were talking about the Xbox 360 HD DVD drive.
That's going to be external.
Yeah.
Which might fix the problem for those people that are having scratched up CDs.
So of course, this is a reaction to Sony's effort to make Blu-ray the dominating format, and they're going to put that into the PS3, so then instantaneously there are going to be hundreds of thousands, and then soon after millions of people who have this new format DVD player, the PS3. It's exactly the same thing that happened with the PS2. DVD players were already out, but then the PS2 came out, and DVD sales in Japan shot up. Big, huge spike because everybody bought a PS2 and suddenly had a DVD player they didn't previously have. So Microsoft says, well, listen, we need to make our format, or the format that we're comfortable with, HD DVD, successful. We already have these Xbox 360s in people's homes, and we'll have plenty more in the next few months. We'll have an external HD DVD drive. And I thought immediately, well, yeah, they're going to announce it because they sort of need to say something, but it's not actually going to get released. I mean, what add-on drives have ever been successful in this country or any other?
Well, I don't know. The Sega CD was pretty popular.
Oh, yeah. I think a couple games sold for that.
Yeah, maybe four.
So here's the thing. I'm talking to the same Microsoft guy about that, and he's like, yeah, of course it'll be released. And I just... Maybe... I didn't listen to the keynote, you know? Maybe they really will release it. Maybe they're super serious. Guarantee, though, that it won't be popular and it will be a failed unit. Like, maybe with Microsoft's intense marketing, it won't be completely failed. Maybe. But I really don't think it can succeed because it's going to be this new format. It's going to have to cost a lot of money to buy the unit. Like, I don't think it'll be able to sell for less than $200. And, so then you add on the price of the Xbox 360, and it costs more than the PS3. And a lot of people think the Blu-ray is better. Plus, people don't want the inconvenience of two separate boxes and having to connect crap. And, well, wait a minute, can I play games on the HD DVD? Which, of course, they said you can't do, which makes sense. And so it'll create more confusion. Anyway, it will not be successful. That is the...
Well, maybe it'll, like, mount onto the side.
I don't know. I'm sure it'll look very cool when attached, but it will not be successful. That is Psychic Alon making his video game prediction. It's happened before, folks. I was right before. Of course, never been wrong. I don't think either of us ever. Neither of us can come up with an example of me ever being wrong. So I must be right. I don't think it'll be successful. Power to them, right? If they want to give me the drive, I will certainly put it on my system. But I won't be buying it for hundreds of dollars because I'd rather have a separate one and guarantee that if the Xbox breaks, the DVD player doesn't break, you know? Anyway, moving on. I don't know how you feel about the HD DVD drive, but...
I know. I was more amazed that they're going to get Elder Scroll Oblivion on one disc.
I read that today, too.
I was amazed, because it just looks so good. That how can they do that?
Who knows? I don't know. That's...
I'll be amazed to see how they feel. Maybe compression got really, really good, you know, in the last few months that I was unaware of. But
listen, I have not followed that game at all. I can't even comment.
My roommate Mike, he yesterday was building a new computer specifically for that game.
That's surprising to me. So. All right, I didn't know Elder Scrolls was a system seller.
Neither did I. I wanted to get a new computer anyways, just because mine is as I like to call the AIDS. I know how much you like when I use that phrase a lot.
And one of these days, man. One of these days.
I would just like to tell those people I am using it as a derogatory form, as in I don't want it to be AIDS.
Nate tries to be as offensive as possible at all times.
I do.
And that's fine. That's perfectly acceptable.
But I will be getting it for the 360 when it comes out, and hopefully sometime in the near future when I can afford a new computer, I will have it for that too.
All right, let's continue to talk about your poverty. I think that's a hot topic.
Everyone wants to hear about that.
Okay. I'm going to move on. A little bit more news.
Speaking of Xbox, especially the live service, apparently one of the users was accused of molestation.
I read about that.
Did you hear about that? 14-year-old boy who met a 26-year-old male, via Xbox Live. The two met, serving conversation with each other through their headsets, and later their relationship moved on to emails, obscene webcam videos, and even a supposed rendezvous at Santa Rosa Park in California.
It blossomed, you might say.
It blossomed.
Yes. Here's my reaction. Matter of time, sir. Just a matter of time.
Oh, yeah. I don't think... I know at least I wasn't surprised at this, But, yeah. Some of you may be shocked and horrified, but yeah. Really...
Just another great way to put negative news to bat against video games.
Oh, of course.
I love it.
I mean, I think we're going to have to ban online play altogether now.
I can't wait for the video camera peripheral. I've talked about it several times, and I don't know why it's not available yet. They pushed it as a major communication feature for the Xbox 360, and still not around, but it will be, and then heads will be rolling. Oh,
well, I mean, it will be nice, because then they can, forgo the webcam videos and just do it right from, the live service.
That is convergence, my friends.
if that's not the future, you don't need to use your PC to communicate. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I can contact 14-year-olds and show them the goods without using my computer. All right. So they caught the guy?
I guess they did catch him. He didn't plead anything. Yesterday in court. I'm not sure if it was yesterday. I'm reading the thing right
now. And is this molestation just because we don't like that an old guy did something with a young kid? Or did he really, attack the kid?
Well, that's the thing. That I believe the kid or the parents are saying that something happened, and he was, again, they arrested him. He's free on bail right now.
My concern is sometimes there's, the 16-year-old girl who gets taken away by the 28-year-old guy. The parents get upset because she's not 18 yet, but she wanted to go. It was willing, all that stuff.
Well, and when you're 14, maybe, it is California, so they do things, a little differently out there. But I would say, maybe someone should, check on this guy a little bit. But that's just me.
No, I'm with you. Still not a perfect gentleman. But I think it's a very different situation than when a guy grabs a kid off the street
and then just takes off. Yeah, he wooed this young boy. Maybe gave flowers.
I was just going to suggest
toys.
That we all wish together that he burn in hell.
That's right.
But since I don't know, I would not wish that upon him if the person went willingly.
What actually happened? It's just alleged. It was a supposed rendezvous. So it may or may not have happened. He's out on bail. He's going to be in court on the 20th of January again. And hopefully they can get all this cleared up. And if, did anything with that kid, I hope, he burns in the lowest level of hell there is. But if all he right. isn't, I'm glad to see, maybe he could be let go.
Okay. So on that note, I'll move into some news about porn. How about that? There was plenty of it around over at CES, and one thing I did, there were two interesting things that I saw. I'm not going to go into huge detail about all of this, but we discussed UMD porn in Japan. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was a few weeks ago. Now, Sony, of course, one leg of Sony saying that they hated the idea, not mentioning the fact that Sony, of course, had to allow it to happen because they're the ones who make the discs. Or license it or whatever. I think they're the only ones who have manufacturing facilities. So they had to actually have a hand in making them. So anyway, they're a little two-faced. We're about to see U.S. UMD porn by a company called Bouncy something. It's got Bouncy in the name. Anyway, they're releasing UMD porn. And apparently it is hardcore pornography, not just a peep show. It is going to be slightly different, though. It's... Again, don't want to get into too great detail, but for those of you who know the difference between X-rated material and triple X-rated material, this actually does have some significance. The UMD porn in America will just be X-rated.
Oh, just X?
Certain things will not be shown, but activities will take place no different than you might see in other hardcore pornography. but the visibility of things might be slightly limited, or completely limited. So anyway, X, not triple X.
So you're still going to have to go to, you know, import your, you know, triple X porn for your MDs.
Yeah. It's... Sony seems to think this is a compromise, I guess. It's okay...
If it's only X, then, I mean, it's not bad. No, X, is that softcore porn?
Well, it's like what they used to have on cable. Of course, now they have full hardcore on satellite. Kids, don't you love this news? Yeah, let's say they don't do close-ups. Let's be gentle and put it that way.
All right.
Certain things are out of view. Conveniently out of view of the camera.
There's when two people make love, they always grab the sheet and pull it over them.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not going to be like just Playboy stuff where you have naked women running around. It's gonna
have a story.
Porn. Yeah. I think we spent way too much time.
I think we did spend way too much time. But it is late, and I believe we're both tired. So.
Yeah. Now the second example is something not at all surprising. But I did want to mention it. There's a company out there, Lurid Entertainment. They are a production house of adult material. And they have been making high-definition material for a while. Now, anytime technology progresses, the adult industry is almost always the one to take hold of the new technology and put it to use faster than anyone else. They've done this with
video?
With HD... movies, right? And like you can download HD videos on your Xbox 360, right? To watch the Mission Impossible trailer or the X-Men 3 trailer, right?
Or Blonde and Blonder 2.
Yeah. Blonde and Blonder. So, no. Not on Xbox Live. No downloading of porn. But,
One day, maybe.
Didn't we read that thing that said Microsoft wasn't going to allow adult content?
They're not
going to
allow AO games.
Yeah, but they do allow streaming of videos from your Media Center PC. So, really, if you have adult material on there, you're going to get it on your Xbox. And that is what this company has taken advantage of. They have made high-definition video. They have made high-definition WMV video. And now, every DVD they sell comes with a second disc, a second DVD, with those HD videos on it. And they're... making an effort to market this to Xbox 360 users because they consider this an instantaneous growing of their market, right? Now people who wouldn't have used it before will have access to it, which I kind of disagree with because their computers could run it anyway. They have Media Center PCs which could run it. Whether or not they have the 360, they could make use of it. But whatever. If they want to think they have a bigger market, that's great. Certainly... it means some people might be more interested in this product just because they want to use their 360. So,
now, is HD the best thing for porn, though? Because, I mean, then you're really seeing it. Because, I mean, you know, this might be a bad example, but, like, watching Conan on regular TV and then watching Conan on high def, he, you know, you really see what he looks like.
That's in your face, buddy.
That's in your face. I mean, do we really want to see, then suddenly, you know, maybe you're...
in your face. That's right.
Maybe I guess I just got your point.
Okay. I think they enjoy the high definition. I saw some examples. It looked very clear. The video was crisp. Anyway, it's being done. Lurid Entertainment, I believe, is the company. Anything you buy from them, two discs. And you know, good. Good for them for making use of technology. I'm always a fan of technology. I'm almost out of news. I did want to mention Electroplankton was released. Of course,
not
virtually impossible
anywhere
to get your hands on. For a while, I think they were going to make it just internet ordering from Nintendo.
That's what I heard. That's why I believe I just assumed that it was.
You may be able to still only buy it only on the internet, but you can buy it from other companies. Like, you can go to GameStop and buy it. Not right now, because it's backordered.
Oh, okay.
But what you should do is put effort into finding this game. It's going to be one of those games which is considered an investment. Down the road, everyone's going to want it when they didn't buy it. Even if you don't have a Nintendo DS, buy it. Because, like I said, it's one of those... I don't even want to call it a game. It's one of those
game,
pieces of software.
It's a music-making system. You know?
Yes. It's niche, and it is cool. And
well, I don't even say niche, because I don't know. Maybe I'm the niche, and... just to me, it's like, I think everyone will want one. I mean, I don't know, I want to play it.
Well, they love Nintendogs.
See, I didn't even think I'd like Nintendogs, and my girlfriend got it. I kind of like that game. It's kind of
fun. You know what I've noticed about you, Nate? you're a sucker. All the games that people say are going to be cool, right, that you're like, eh, I'm not going to play it, right? When you do finally play it, kind of like if you tried Guitar Hero. When you finally play it,
I like it.
You realize you like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I think you have some inherent pessimism.
I do. I do.
A little bit built in there.
It's, well, it's, you know, I'm Norwegian, and, you know, my last name is Vig, so it's, like, it's hardwired in there. Like, I can't like anything right away.
Okay. Is that what the Norwegians do?
Remember when cell phones came out? Hated cell phones. I was like, there's no reason anyone needs a cell. How big are you that you need to carry a phone around with you?
Uh-huh. And now you're the one with the hot phone, picture messaging.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. That stuff? Crap. Well, we don't need that.
Until you start using
until it. Until I start using. Actually, when I first started using text messaging, I hated it. I was like, why? Like, I can't, you know, I can just call you and talk to you for free. I don't need to spend a nickel.
I don't like you have to spend extra money, but let me tell you, I wish I could text message and not use the phone. I wish I could just text.
Just text message.
Oh, my God. It'd be so much better. All right, we're getting off course here. We're going to end the show. Was there anything else we wanted to discuss before we go?
I don't think so. Oh, one thing I could add, just another jab at Indigo Prophecy. Really like to use that Rumble Pack. Like, I get a cup of coffee, Rumble Pack goes on. Get up from the chair, Rumble Pack goes. Open up a door, Rumble Pack goes. Really like to use the Rumble Pack.
I like the Rumble features in games. I'm glad they took advantage of it. All right, folks, next week we're going to be back on the air in the studio. KFNX, they love us. We're going to be back. You can call in and talk to us about anything we talked about this week, anything on your mind, anything we talk about next week. Please do join in.
Yes.
Please. Also, don't forget to go to chatterboxgameshow.com for, you know, all stuff Chatterbox. Might even update the site about what's happening next week.
Go to the forums. Lon and I have, I believe, blogs. Another thing I dislike, even though I use. I kind of go off topic. I'm more of, like, entertainment. You talk more about Chatterbox. I talk a little bit more about my life. Last time,
and you know what? I haven't contributed in a while, but I will get back to it, possibly with information regarding a secret announcement. Don't want to talk about it now, but I think next week we may have a very big and important announcement to make regarding Chatterbox. Stay tuned for that. Maybe not.
All right, my big blog will be coming up fairly soon. I'm going to say this. Don't hold me to it, but I'm going to say end of the week.
All right, I'm going to hold you to it, because you know what? You need to learn to not promise things.
I do need to do that.
I've been trying to teach you this lesson for weeks.
Yes.
I've been
getting a lot of requests for my Mexico story. People seem to want to hear. All my friends have heard it
I don't think that's appropriate for OneUp.com. They might kick it off.
Last time I talked about how the cleaning ladies at UAT always seem to find me when I'm on the toilet and want to come in and clean.
Listen, I'll just tell you one thing, a little teaser, folks. It has something to do with donkeys in Mexico.
No, dogs in Mexico.
Dogs. Forgive me.
They didn't have the donkey show. Forgive. He was on vacation.
Forgive the confusion. All right. And next week, I think one of our topics may just have something to do with, like I discussed before, the virtual economies and how they collide with real-world economies. This article that the guy wrote about the IRS and, you know, now the hypothetical situation where the IRS will be coming after you for your virtual goods.
For your virtual
goods.
Money.
Think about it. If you invest $1,000 in a sword...
Can they do eminent domain on your virtual property? Like, what if they find some oil there?
But it's a valid claim. If I invest $1,000 in a special sword, and then a year from now I still have that sword, but it's only worth, 10% of what it was worth a year ago... and then I sell it, I have potentially taken a loss of income, and I should be able to write it off.
You claim that, yeah. Well, also, if that's your only source of income, can you pretty much, like, your life revolves around playing these games. We really should be talking about this next show, so I'm going to stop talking.
Okay.
Because I should discuss this on the
show.
This
is our teaser.
Yeah.
All right, next week, folks, be back. We are out, done for this week. It seemed to be an extra long show. I hope you enjoyed it. And that's it.
All right.
Goodbye, everybody.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.